You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 477 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Carcino,
and we're coming to you in separate locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of
hello
the AL West leading.
There it is,
tied. Seattle Mariners.
Woo! Tied.
Gotta get the parentheses tied. Look, certain
hot. Don't we have the tiebreaker?
Probably.
Leading.
Certain hot takes were made, and certain hot takes prophecies have been fulfilled in totality.
Fulfilled, yeah. And all that I said was at any point. I actually need to go listen back to this because I'm pretty sure I said 5-game lead by the time.
Did you say 5-game lead?
And you know what? We are on track right now.
Rule it out. Who could rule it out?
I mean, the deficit shrunk from more than 5 games not that long ago. I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, but who even cares? The Seattle Seahawks played a game. They're going to play another game. Who cares? It's baseball time in Seattle, baby.
Well, they are still the Super Bowl 48 champions.
They were the Super Bowl 48 champions.
You always remain the Super Bowl 48 champions. They're not going to play another Super Bowl 48. They're not going to write over that one.
Coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champions of the past.
On that note, congrats.
I don't know what World Series it is. A lot. But
they don't really do numerals for that one. But yes, it's many more than there are Super Bowls. So many more. Congrats to Third Pelton brother, Mike Sean Dugar, on the release of his book, The Franchise, Seattle Seahawks, A Curated History of the Legion of Boom Era, which came out officially on Tuesday. So be sure to check that out. Order your copy if you haven't already. I am just about finished with the read, and I am very excited to have Mike Sean on to discuss the book. And
do we get a book report when he's not on?
Like me reviewing it to
not
the listener?
Reviewing it. I'm assuming it's 5 stars, right?
Obviously, yes.
It's a perfect review. We don't need a review, but I'm just kind of curious.
It's
if there
three Pelton Cast piece.
There we go. If there are any sort of takeaways that you think would be helpful to hint at or conversations to have right now or interesting nuggets that you learned.
I want to save it for when Mike Sean is on.
Okay.
I think it's just going to be more interesting that way. But I'll put it to you this way. There is already a section of notes in the notes. Statistical research devoted to discussing the book.
Is it disputing claims that the players have made?
What do you think?
Oh, no.
What do you think? Is it fact-checking members of the Legion of Boom?
Are the Legion of Boom almost as bad at stats as people who vote for the MLB Hall of Fame?
Look, I don't expect players to have an objective viewpoint about their own careers. Not their own careers. Obviously, they are all, you know, the three members of the Legion of Boom who played the bulk of their careers in Seattle, like all elite at their positions, without question, two Hall of Famers in that group, and Cam Chancellor, you know, if his career had been longer. So it's not me disputing that. I'm not taking down the Legion of Boom here. But you know, perhaps their perspectives about certain
ESPN
other players.
ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton eviscerates the Legion of Boom. You're not taking down Legion of Boom. As if anyone would care.
I agree. Again, I don't want to make that
clear. You
can
say whatever.
Well.
You could not slander anyone, but you can have a semi-negative opinion of very famous Seattle sports athletes on this very podcast.
We reserve that for a member of the 2005 Seahawks.
Not who I'm talking about.
Wait, who are you talking about?
I'm talking about the one who had a big ceremony this weekend.
Oh, okay. Well, he'll guess come up what? Later. That's coming in the notes. That is coming in the notes. You can't successfully take down that player.
You can't even
take down the coming statue. But anyways, I'm excited to have this conversation and really dig deep on this with Mike Sean Dugar because I'm learning a lot from the book. That's the main takeaway I'll say, is that like there is, you know, a lot of it is him kind of compiling, not a lot of it. Some of it is him compiling the various podcast appearances that former Seahawks players have made, which admittedly there's a lot of them. And so
you have to
I'm
do a lot of work
listening
to
that,
all of those
that frequently. Yeah. And then there's also new and original reporting. So it's like the most in-depth perspective on this era that has ever been out there. I mean,
All right.
we talked to Mike Sean about it during the while he was writing the book, when he was, has been on the pod in the past, and like he's been talking about how excited he is, and I
I mean, it
understand
was
why.
begging a time period that was begging for this type of analysis as well. Because
Of treatment.
obviously, for the Seahawks, like the most interesting and the greatest time period in their franchise history, but also the most interesting time period
Yeah, I
and the
mean
most
the
personalities.
personalities,
Yeah.
yeah. So, anyways, again, check it out. It is officially a PeltonCast copy, so I suppose I'll have to lend it to you after I finish reading later this week.
There we go.
All right, congrats to third Pelton brother Mina Kimes on appearing on Late Night with Seth Meyers earlier this week, which got me thinking: how many Pelton brothers have been on Late Night with Seth Meyers? Because Sue Bird has.
Okay.
She and Megan Rapinoe were on last year. I'm unclear though if any other third Pelton brothers have been on there. So.
Just a question of, is it more than two? The over under is 2.5.
The over-under is
If
two,
they've ever had
actually.
Rashard Lewis or Hersey Hawkins on.
Bill Barnwell. I know Aaron Schatz has been on, I think, but I don't think Billy Barnwell has been on, sadly.
Get Nate Duncan on Seth Meyers, people.
All right, and then lastly, congrats to Ichiro. As it was revealed during this weekend's Hall of Fame ceremonies, including the retiring of his number 51 jersey, that the Mariners will be unveiling a statue of Ichiro outside T-Mobile Park to be installed in 2026 with another one of these ceremonies.
They're just milking it.
Oh, without question. I mean, they're not milking it quite as well as the Storm, I gotta say. So, 2022, Sue Bird,
Because they're doing
retirement.
Randy Johnson next year, also.
It is true. It
They're
is
gonna have,
true.
they're like, we gotta sell tickets to these A's series.
But that's only still like 2 summers. Sue Bird, 2022, her retirement and final game, 2023 jersey retirement, 2024 street named after her, although that wasn't at a game, it wasn't the same activation around a game. And then this weekend on Sunday, they will be unveiling the Sue Bird sculpture outside of Climate Pledge Arena in a ceremony before they host the Phoenix Mercury.
It's early. It's early for the Mariners. Give them time.
Oh, true.
They're going to have ring ceremonies next
They've been
year.
milking 1995
People,
and
we will not even
2021 for a solid
remember
two
what
decades.
Ichiro's name is by this time next year.
Wow. Now there's
It's
a
going to
hot
be
take.
like, it's, I mean, it's going to be quaint. The perspective that we have about any Mariners before the 2025 season, it'll be
going
cute.
to be like, maybe you need to have played in more than NALCS before you get a statue.
It's sort of like how we think about Cortez Kennedy. It's like Cortez Kennedy was an awesome player, but
Yes.
he didn't win
Yeah,
a Super Bowl.
I mean,
The Legion of Boom era that we're talking about.
through no fault of his own, Cortez Kennedy, one player can't do that in football, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. But maybe that relates back to the debate that we're going to discuss. So we have no cookie search for you this week. Logistically, it did not work out. I was hoping to be able to bring Tristan some cookies yesterday, and the timing was just not there. So we'll get back at it, continue competing next week. But we do have an NBA update sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza, who have ruled out perhaps my favorite seasonal, the pizza, is out there now. So
Oh,
be sure
the
to
Peach
check that out.
Supremo?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I thought you were talking about NBA Seattle update. I know we were talking Pagliacci. No, the Peach is incredible.
Lifelong Peach is a fan. All right, anyways. News
Did we never
Wednesday.
talked about the burger, the Pagliacci Little Woody's burger. We never talked about that
Well,
officially
I talked
online
about it.
after.
You didn't talk about it because you had it after we recorded 2 weeks
Here's what I'll
ago.
say. I thought it was good. This is not a complaint about it, but I do think we have to get closer, and I have to experiment with this myself, to an actual Pagliacci pizza slice with a burger in the middle. And I think that's the only way, because there was nothing really tying it to Pagliacci, in my opinion.
It definitely wasn't like a distinctly Pagliacci slice. Like, even though it was, bun shaped, it could have been more Pagliacci coated, I would say, than it was.
Because eating a burger with like a little pocket like that, like you can do around a folded pizza, is actually great. It's almost like it's better to eat a burger that way, right? Because of gravity. So if the juices are flowing down, they get gathered by the bottom of the pizza.
What do you think they're getting gathered by now?
Nothing. They just
The
fall to the ground.
bottom bun. How
No,
much
that's if you're
wider
eating
are
it
your.
perfectly flat. People typically turn a burger when they're eating it.
I mean, I suppose that's true. Yes, I is the machine. I raise it precisely to the height of my mouth, and then see, this is where we need video. I don't know, no, actually, we don't need video. It's good that we do not have video of me simulated eating
There
as a
will never be
robot.
video. No one needs video. Not of us. Not right
We
now.
used to do video clips.
Did we? No, we didn't.
Yeah, we did.
When? Of us recording? Oh, on Zoom? I hated it every time.
It's a lot of effort. I don't have that much time. I'm busy.
Anyway, tell us about the actual NBA Seattle update, because I'm curious about this one.
Well, it's an NBA update. It's not
Yes.
specifically Seattle, but a reported Wednesday first by Lev Akabes of Sportico that a group led by Carolina Hurricanes chairman Tom Dundon has reached agreement to buy the Blazers at a valuation of more than $4 billion. Per friend of the pod, Sean Hyken of the Rose Garden Report, the Dundon bid stood out in part because of local minority partner Sheil Tyal, who's the head of private equity firm Collective Global and is based in Portland. Sources told the Rose Garden Report, as well as others, that the group's intention is to keep the Blazers in Portland long term. Dundon is based in Dallas, but an interesting thing about it, so obviously he's owned the Hurricanes, who are not local to him, and kept them in Raleigh, North Carolina, striking a deal to renovate the Lenovo Center as part of a long-term lease that was going to expire, set to expire in 2024. So a very similar situation facility-wise to what they're facing in Portland. Now that doesn't mean necessarily that's going to be the same playbook as in terms of a renovation as opposed, or a more, elaborate renovation as opposed to trying to build an entirely new arena. But certainly shows that he has worked with local government to keep a team in what is not the biggest market out there. So that's, I think, should be encouraging for Blazers fans.
What is the general tenor are you seeing from Blazers fans right now? Is there
Oh,
panic or?
they're very nervous that the team is going to move to Seattle.
Oh, it's Seattle that scares
Oh
them?
yeah,
You should be scared.
which no one in Seattle wants. We want to beat the Blazers. We do
No,
not want to
absolutely not.
be the
No, I
Blazers.
mean I'm not so completely opposed to a team moving from Seattle as maybe other people are.
Moving to Seattle, you
Moving
are
I'm pretty
pretty
opposed. There's no
opposed.
teams to move from Seattle, so
No NBA teams. There's lots of other teams to move, and would prefer them not to move. Except maybe you might move a few.
I just, I'm not as opposed to a team moving to Seattle. Like, if it's the Pelicans or somebody like that, it is a little bit of the Pelicans were the franchise that belonged in Oklahoma City. It was sort of like that. That was kind of like the trigger of what led to all of these actions that led to the Sonics being moved. However, I think Adam Silver is a very different commissioner than David Stern is. And I think Adam Silver's interest is not in being hated the way that David Stern was and not being remembered the way that David Stern was. I think he's a little bit more aware of those things. And I don't think David Stern gave a fuck. So, do you agree with that? You're thinking.
I mean, in some ways, yes, in some ways, no. But I would just say, like,
Portland is also a very stable city with regards to
the
the
NBA
NBA.
as a league in pro sports in general was in a very different place 17 years ago than it is now. Like, obviously, there is still substantial public funding for arenas, especially in smaller markets. But nowadays, the idea that you would go into Seattle and be like, hey, give us all this money for a new arena, like, it's just not how it works, and also probably wouldn't necessarily be best for you because so much of it is a real estate play anyway.
Yes.
So.
But the support in Portland has been excellent. Like, I would be shocked if that was the team moving to Seattle. I mean, I don't know what you're hearing on the latest. Does this affect expansion in any way?
I don't think so. I mean, definitely there was no sense. We talked about this at the time that Adam Silver was not at that point pumping the brakes on expansion. Even though he was speaking hours before this news of the Blazers being up for sale by the Paul G. Allen estate came, that brake pumping occurred later, and I think seemingly for unrelated reasons. As we've talked about, it's more about, I think, getting
He just doesn't have the
80,
votes.
75% of the owners on board in terms of what the price point is, what they're giving up in terms of national TV revenue, all of those factors. And then the NBA Europe element is looming out there as well. But I don't think it was, we need to get a valuation of Portland or you know, figure out
is
the
that
Portland
4
situation.
billion number, is that about what you would have guessed it would be for the franchise?
It's on the high side for sure. I mean, their valuation, I think this was in the Sportico piece, I think it was like 3.625 million billion. And the thing about the sales is they almost always come in above the valuations, which always makes me, you know, being a dumb guy, it's like, you know, the meme of, you know, people at either ends of the spectrum are like, why don't they just make the values higher? And then in the middle, it's like, no, you have to account for the PE ratio and all of these complexities. And it's like, but if you
I
keep
don't know
being
what types of
wrong,
memes you're looking at. A lot of the memes I see don't have PE ratios in them, but okay, fair
no,
enough.
that's, but you understand the meme of like, I don't like to think in these terms, but it's like the genius and the dumb guy, and they think alike. And then the person in between has like this super nuanced, complex take.
Yes.
And it's like, actually, the real correct take is the same as the simple take. So if the teams keep selling for more than their valuation, why don't you just increase the valuations?
I mean, I guess so. I'm sure there is a logic to it, but
But anyways,
what is the
4
number
billion
for
is a
Seattle?
4
It's
billion for a team in Portland, Oregon
yes.
is pretty unthinkable. I mean,
So the
this is,
number for Seattle that we were sort of thinking was like in the five range, right?
I think at this point there is no, if you can get 4 billion for a team in Portland, there's no way it makes sense to put a team in Seattle for less than six.
Okay.
So that's
So
not
that
sourced
it
at all.
might
That's just
set a
my read of the
number
situation.
for, and I do
But
think that there's always a number and there's always a rich guy who's willing to take less to eventually have more of the piece of the pie.
without question, and Adam Silver always talks about it as, well, really, you're selling off equity, but people do sell off equity all the time. It just depends what the number is.
It's not like
I don't
selling off
think,
equity is unheard of, you know,
exactly. I
like.
don't think they needed the 4 billion valuation for the Blazers, though, to get to a 6 billion valuation
To get
for.
to the number. But is it higher? I mean, I guess what you're saying is if the valuations keep
I
coming
mean,
in
at some
higher, is it
point,
7.5?
well,
Is
at some
there
point, if the valuation is
does
high
money
enough, I
matter
don't
at
think.
all?
I think it does. There is a limit for the Kraken ownership group, is my sense.
You think it has to be the Kraken ownership group, though?
I don't think it has to be. I think there's a limit for the Kraken ownership group.
Okay. Does that hurt Seattle, though? I guess we're having a Seattle conversation now. If it is,
Obviously, we're always having a Seattle
if the
conversation.
conversation is first to with the Kraken ownership group, and they're like, this is a number we are willing to go to, and that's the number that they're going back to the league. An open market, obviously, the number is going to be higher. If you're going to be able to go find a billionaire from Houston who, or is it Houston? A billionaire
Dallas.
from Houston who owns the Carolina Hurricanes, who wants to buy the Portland Trailblazers, all of a sudden, the words you're saying are a little confusing, but there are those people that are out there, right? That are probably not part of the Kraken ownership group. So, is there a,
Well,
like,
what I
they
would
have to
say is,
move past that or show those people, like, hey, you have the building, but we have the owners here?
it's more complex if it's not the Kraken ownership group, because
I
they.
mean, to me, the team being in Seattle is the impetus for if there's another arena, like, do the hockey team and the basketball team have to play in the same arena?
They don't.
Owning the team is the first step.
I agree,
Of
but
owning the building.
it would be very complex to build the second arena, which is why the Soto Arena wasn't built, or even given the necessary approvals. So it would be a lot more complex if it's not the
Fair enough.
Kraken ownership
But
group.
we shouldn't have, I didn't see this news at all and think to myself, oh, that team's moving to Seattle, because
But
again, if
you're not a paranoid Portland fan. You have to put yourself in the minds of a Portland fan who has constantly been told that your city is lesser than Seattle, you
Correctly. Correctly.
know. Portland and Seattle are both amazing cities in their own rights. Portland does not have the
Just south of
industry
Portland,
base.
though.
Not a fan. You're going to want to stay on I-5, not get off.
Think, look, I'm all for annexing Portland into Washington State. I've said it. I am willing to take Portland. It's the rest of the state that I'm not interested in.
Are they going to be willing to deal with the sales tax? You're just going to carve out like Cannon Beach in Portland and get those into Washington.
No,
Basically
Cannon Beach is
gerrymandered these.
fine. I'm fine
No,
crossing enemy lines
I'm
into Cannon
saying
Beach.
you're including them. We're
I mean,
gerrymandering them and then
I'm okay
in.
if Cannon Beach is in Oregon, though.
Okay.
That's fine to me.
You just want Portland.
Yet.
Okay.
Imagine the rivalry. Like, literally, the rivalry would be so much better if they were in Washington State. It's kind of hilarious. The distance wouldn't change, but the state would be the same.
Yes, I don't know how
Also,
we got here.
imagine the voting block.
I mean, I think I would have some concerns about the state of Oregon politically in this
Maybe.
scenario. I don't know if you've thought through this through entirely. Anyways,
Showing their true colors.
I understand the why there would be paranoia about Portland, and specifically, like, look, was it painful for the Sonics to move to Oklahoma City? Does it remain painful? Yes, of course. If the scenario was that they moved to, I guess in this scenario, like Seattle's older brother has always been LA, like had the Seahawks moved to LA in 1995, yeah, that would have been extra painful. So.
Do you think Seattle's older brother is LA?
Oh, without question.
I mean, it's.
LA is like, well, we don't think, I don't even think about you at all.
Yeah. I mean, LA and New York are like on the same level. It's not LA
But
and
I'm saying,
Seattle.
like, well, what is the older brother to Seattle? We're obviously the biggest city in the Pacific Northwest. It's got to be either the Bay Area or LA.
It's probably more the Bay Area, but.
Now, in the tech era, it is, but in the early 90s, for sure, it was LA. All right. Well, there we go. We'll stay tuned on this one. And,
I mean,
you know,
this is happening, right? There's no.
I mean, they still have to vote it under the Board of Governors, but there's not, you know, it would take an extreme event for it not to happen at this point. Speaking of extreme events, it's time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
Yes, I did see the news. Thank you. And honestly, I have to say, I'm excited about the Ichiro statue going up outside of T-Mobile Park because. Now every Mariners hitter with a career WRC plus of 104 is going to have a statue erected for themselves. The person who should be most excited about this news is Paul Sorrento, Jean Segura, Jim Pechorek, Phil Bradley, Mike Cameron, Mitch Haniger, Ty France, and the rest of the other 24 players who have a better Mariners WRC plus than Ichiro and don't already have a statue for themselves. But it's incredible that in Seattle, the statue qualifications have been cut in half. From two career playoff appearances for the very deserving Ken Griffey Jr. to now just one. He has barely more playoff appearances than the Mitt. And people like you, literally you, will come back and say, oh, so Mike Trout doesn't deserve a statue then. And motherfucker, Mike Trout was contributing wins to his team. He's in the top 30 all time in WAR since 1900 and finished in the top five of MVP voting. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine times, winning three of them. Do you know how many times Ichiro finished in the top five of MVP voting? Just once in his rookie season. I'm not going to wait for you to answer. And I hear people talking about how Ichiro wasn't a power hitter. He just knew how to get on base, which would be great if there were only one single way to get on base via a fucking single. But if you look at on base percentage, do you know how many times Ichiro finished in the top 10 during his Mariners career? Also, just once, ninth in 2004. That was his good season. Look, we can't all be Brian Giles, who actually was awesome and should have a statue outside of some city in the Midwest. At no point in his career was Ichiro the best of anything. Considered to be important in the sport. But the rich man's Placido Polanco was almost unanimously inducted into the Hall of Fame, and we were mad that he wasn't. But I do have a statue that they need to build. No, I mean this honestly. We're revising that number right down to zero playoff appearances because if you look at pitching war for Felix's 10-year prime in Seattle, he is the best. In baseball from 2005 to 2014, Ichiro could never. Complete and total domination of the sport, four times in the top five of Cy Young voting. And if you're looking at each of their best seasons by war, it would go Ichiro number one, and then Felix, 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 Felix. This is what someone with a statue should look like, all the while carrying the terrible offense on the other side. Why not continue the trend and build a statue for an actual great player, someone who has the best pitching performance in Mariners history, an iconic commercial, the Mariners now are 3-for-4 with 50 win players getting statues for them. So why not complete the set? Four aces, the double, junior, the king, and the single. Right there on Edgar Martinez Drive, next to the soon-to-come statues for Bruce Bochy and Mike Flowers.
Oh, dear.
I can't believe I had to do this take. I'm shutting that. I can't believe that we better... You better not lose this because I closed the take forever. But I can't believe I had to do this take when the Mariners are in first place in the AL West. Look at what you people have done to me.
So Ichiro's career WRC plus with the Mariners is not a 104.
That's his career WRC plus.
It's 110.
Ooh. Although,
it appears that's only 22nd all time.
Look out there, kids. 110? Still worse than Paul Sorrento. Still worse than Ty France, who was released.
Actually, is not worse than Paul Sorrento. It is now ahead of Paul Sorrento, but is still behind Ty France. You're correct. And you know the important thing is that positional value.
I'm looking at. Are you looking on Fangraphs?
Well, no, because they don't have it by the Mariners. Only
they do have it by the Mariners
for career.
I think so.
All right, then why did you cite the wrong number then?
I didn't. I said 110. It's his career is 104. His Mariners career is 110.
I see. Okay.
I had the Mariners number correct. Thank you, Mr. Stats over here.
Well, I was confused because you changed midway through. And if I'm confused, I'm betting the listener is confused.
Oh, and they actually are. Of all podcasts, they're going to go look up the stats.
Well, good point. It'll be on the Discord.
I was fudging a little bit by including Mike Blowers, whose Mariners 10-year WRC plus was better than Ichiro's career WRC plus, but not Ichiro's on the Mariners. If you needed clarification about this very average baseball player. It's fine. It is so fine. It's like one of those things where you like study your enemies so well. I have looked so much and I understand exactly why Ichiro's I understand exactly why Ichiro, his war is what it is, which is good, not great.
it is the best in Mariners franchise history.
It's nowhere near unanimous MVP, though.
Unanimous Hall of Fame, you mean?
Unanimous Hall of Famer. Unanimous MVP.
Wasn't that either, yes.
But
has there been a unanimous MVP?
Basically, Ichiro was a pretty good hitter, a pretty good defender, and a pretty good base runner for a chunk of time. That is how you get to the place of having the war that he had. He was not great at any of these things. And I think that's the thing that is the most annoying about Ichiro, is that people talk about Ichiro as if he was a player of the same caliber of, say, Ken Griffey Jr. or Alex Rodriguez or Edgar Martinez. Those players, and even Felix. Felix was a great player. Felix was the best pitcher in baseball. Ichiro was never the best anything. Now I'm actually talking this non-take style. Ichiro was never the best anything in baseball. And he was never even really close to the best anything in baseball.
2004, he would have, without question, been the best outfielder. I mean, first off, when you say baseball, they don't have a Cy Young Award for baseball. They have it for the American League. I don't know how his...
I mean, that's even worse.
Compared to the NL Cy Young winner.
It's even worse that we're minimizing it. For Felix, it was four times in the top five of Cy Young voting. Ichiro was a single time. He was never even that good when he was on the team, and time passed and everybody just determined Ichiro was great. And I think what happened was we kind of have nostalgia for the bad era and we have to just pick a player to be excited about for a period of time. Or maybe this 2001 season was so special to people. I wasn't there personally that you just, we looked past every other part of his career. I literally did not see a game of 2001.
I mean, I think there's some similarity between Ichiro's career and
Placido Polanco's.
Sue Bird's career. As we've talked about, obviously the championship success is not there. An individual can't do as much to win championships.
See, this is crazy for you to be bringing Sue Bird into this.
Like
by invoking Sue Bird, is that not inherently offensive?
Sue, obviously, amazing Sue Bird, greatest player in Storm history. has an argument as one of the great athletes in Seattle sports history. Also, was never the best player on any of the good Storm teams she was on. So, like, there was this element of she's very good at a lot of she's very good over a long period of time and that consistency and longevity. So, when you look at Ichiro making the All-Star game every season in his 10 first, 10 consecutive seasons, his first 10 seasons in Seattle. Like, that's the thing that, Felix's prime was awesome, but Felix's prime was also relatively brief. Or his, not relatively brief, but there wasn't a lot outside of that prime, I guess is what I'm saying here.
For intro,
For Felix,
for feeling, but he
who was
was
a
the best
seven-time
pitcher
All-Star.
in baseball.
Again, you keep saying that as a
No, he
fact.
wasn't just the by WAR from 2005 to 2014 for a 10-year period. He is number one of everybody, not the American League, not the National League, the best for a 10-year period. If you are the best pitcher for a 10-year period of baseball in all of history, they've been playing the sport for a long time, but a decade is still a long time within that. That is an important thing to be.
What
And
is
to
this
me, it
based
is
on?
Fangraphs WAR.
He was the best of any pitcher in that stretch.
I believe so.
Okay. Which decade?
2005 to 2014.
Okay. That's true. Then that's really good. Anyways, I.
Thanks. Thank you. But we don't talk about him in the same way. We do not talk about him in the same breath. He is number one, and do you know who number two is?
Not really.
Mariners legend Cliff Lee. That's right.
Oh,
They had them
wow,
both. But that's
they
ahead
were
of
teammates.
Verlander, CC Sabathia, Roy Halladay, Clayton Kershaw, Zach Greinke, like all of these players who are discussed in the same caliber, not as Ichiro, because he's the greatest player of all time. It's offensive that he wasn't a unanimous Hall of Famer. He was the best player by three wins, too. It's not nothing that he was the best player for that time period.
I mean, I think it's probably with Ichiro more
The one season that was led by Brett Boone?
who he is and like what he represents.
What is wrong
Those
with
are
Felix Hernandez?
nothing's wrong with Felix
Felix
Hernandez. He's not
Hernandez
the
was.
first position player from his country.
I guess so. How many star Venezuelan players were there at the time?
But
Were there any star Venezuelan players before Felix Hernandez?
like, I don't think when people, when
At
Felix Hernandez
19 years old, he was
came to the.
pitching, like dominating in the majors. Felix Hernandez is so much more impressive than Ichiro is. He did the things that matter too.
I mean, I'm not saying anything negative about Felix. I want to be clear.
I just
If
don't
you look
even.
at WAR from 2001 through 2010, Ichiro was third in baseball behind Albert Pujols and Alex Rodriguez. So I don't think you're giving him enough credit here. And
But no,
like,
I told you exactly what it is. That's how Ichiro got to. He's not a great hitter. He's a good hitter, but there's almost no argument that Ichiro is a great hitter.
he's sort of a great pure hitter in a sense. And obviously, people do still overrate batting average.
What does that mean? Pure hitter?
In terms of like just the ability to hit the baseball where people aren't.
And what is the value of that?
But people enjoy that
You know where
viscerally.
people aren't? In the stands. There are a lot less defenders in the stands than there are anywhere on the field. Oh, Lord. Is there like oh, here we go. WAR. Felix is the sixth best Venezuelan player of all time. But at the time that he was a star, I mean, Johan Santana was also, Omar Vizquel is Venezuelan as well. He was pretty much Luis Aparicio is the only one before him, and I think the only Venezuelan Hall of Famer. But Felix was basically the second great Venezuelan player.
Okay. No, you don't get as many awards for being the second of something as the first of something. Do you, who's the
I mean,
second
Hideo
guy?
Nomo was also a great Japanese player.
Was he though? Hideo Nomo was a good Japanese player.
Oh my God. Okay, fine. Whatever.
Can we talk about the current Mariners?
Yes. I'm
One eight
done
in a
talking about
row.
Ichiro forever. I know too much about Ichiro.
I will say Ichiro's stats were not quite as good as I thought they were when I looked them up.
Really?
I will acknowledge that. So the Mariners are on an 8-game winning streak, 9-1 since they acquired Eugenio Suarez. Build the good vibe statue.
Hello.
And now 59-31 in August since Julio Rodriguez's rookie season of 2022. Like Seattle, the summer is the best time for the Mariners.
The boys of summer will not go this year. August is where it's at for the Mariners. It's funny because Gino's not necessarily contributing to it, but I will tell you, you can feel yesterday when Andrés Muñoz needed hydration or whatever on the mound. Were you watching this?
No.
Do you want, so Munoz, it was like a kind of a strange situation, but it was a hot night in Baltimore and he needed like a hydration gel pack. And do you want to know who was in fucking charge in that infield?
Gino.
It was Eugenio Suarez. He was the one talking to everybody being like, go get this, go get these packs. It is like, you could tell right there that Gino is the person. And that's like, we could talk about these things don't matter necessarily or whatever, but I don't think it's a coincidence. And obviously, well, Josh Naylor's play along with it as well has been like everyone's playing well. But
I'm surprised you care as someone who exclusively cares about the stats.
Gino is so clearly, and it's incredible to have that moment like 10 days after he's been on the team, right? How quickly that happened and just how natural it feels for Gino to be there at third. It's kind of like he was never gone. So I thought that was actually a really important moment to see him being there and just like not defending Munoz. He didn't need to be defended, but just being like, go there, do this, go there, supporting. Do that. Gino was in charge
leading
of everybody out there. And that's kind of how it goes for an infield. It wasn't Cal Raleigh. It wasn't J.P. Crawford. It was Eugenio Suarez.
Look, Josh Naylor, I've been saying all along, such a massive upgrade at first base. I mean, he's been awesome. Like, full credit to Josh Naylor. The combination of bat control, the power, and obviously the stolen bases.
Speed.
Like, it's been awesome to see. And we were very early on the no holes thing. Way too early, because it was dating back to opening night 2023. But eventually, if you keep saying something enough time, it's gonna come true. So, yeah.
No, I mean, Naylor's probably been the biggest difference, obviously. Like, the weeks that he's spent in Seattle have been as good as seasons as other players have had. The stolen base numbers here, it's like something about him and Dan, or maybe it's EY Jr. They found each other and it works.
I mean, I assume at some point, like, other teams are going to be so attuned to Josh Naylor running that it's not going to be available to the Mariners.
I mean, he swiped, I think it was third, just without even a throw. Like, seeing those plays, when I'm like, Josh Naylor just, he's playing at like a higher degree of baseball than the rest of us.
Yeah.
We're not playing baseball at all.
Only kickball. And sore for like a week afterwards. I gotta say, you know what else is exciting?
What's that?
Did you see that Tacoma Rainiers lineup the other night?
Oh my god. Oh, dominating.
Victor Robles starting his rehab assignment. Luke Rayleigh continuing his rehab assignment there. It's like a bunch of guys who have played in the major leagues. And then Harry Ford, who hopefully is not too far away from making his debut.
But the Naylor stats are going to come down. And obviously we know that, right? The OPS plus of 158, which is way better than any other time in his career.
Yeah.
Who knows, though? Sometimes somebody gets hot and they just stay hot. But I do feel like there are enough pieces in the lineup that even as Josh Naylor, if he regresses a little bit, there's just so many different players. And that's what we talked about with the no holes. It's like they've got even beyond them. And I think that's why the AAA matters, is this team, I'm going to do a giant knock on wood, could withstand an injury right now.
Yeah, I would not say those words, even if it might be reality, but yeah, it just, like, obviously Gino is going to hit better than he has in his first 10 games back in Seattle. That's just inevitable, and that can help make up for it if someone like Josh Naylor comes back to her.
But the pitching performance, you know, it's not like a great Orioles lineup, but Kirby just absolutely shutting them down in the heat last night. And you look at the schedule and it's kind of like, I don't see a ton of losses here, and there are going to be some really fun series coming up.
I mean, obviously, so, there's going to be some losses, but
the
Mariners now I don't know what the right adjective to describe to this to append to this is, but 57% to win the AL West at Fangraphs.
Hello.
37% to clinch a bye and finish in a top two spot, 96% to make the playoffs, and 10% to win the World Series.
It is. I mean, I think Fangraphs has always been pretty high on this Mariners team.
Although not as high as Pacoda at Baseball Prospectus.
And Pacoda's even higher, where they're number one to win the World Series.
I believe that is now the case, yes.
What does Vegas have? I have to look that up. But this weekend, looking at
I'll
it,
look it up.
where you have the consecutive series at the Mets, at the Phillies, and then the Vetter series, the Vetter Cup coming after that. Like, there are a lot of little tests for this Mariners team, and I think they know it as well. They have to go out and beat the bad teams, but to go play very good teams on the road in the heat in August in these places that they don't play very often, like, if the Mariners can come out with series wins on those two in the Philadelphia and the Mets series, like, I think it's a legit conversation that they are World Series contenders.
The Mariners are number four in
They're
World
fourth.
Series odds, at title odds, that is win the World Series at ESPN Bet, behind three NL teams. The
So the
Dodgers,
best in the American League.
although weirdly not the favorite to win the American League pennant, that's still the Tigers. The Dodgers, the Phillies, and the equally surging Milwaukee Brewers.
Oh, the Brewers are the best team in the league. I mean, you would never bet against the Dodgers right now. Like, the Dodgers are the safe bet for World Series winner, but that, I mean, the Brewers are the last team to win a series against the Mariners, right? I guess the freaking A's. But
The Mariners -140 to win the AL West.
the way that the Brewers played the Mariners, obviously that was pre-Naylor, pre-Gino Mariners team. They were different back then. But the Brewers team was kind of like, this team is relentless seeing them. And even the win that they had was the 1-0 win. And then, yeah, their run differential that series was 16-3 against Milwaukee. So I don't think that's something that would happen with this new lineup, but these series this weekend are going to be informative for the Mariners. And right now, with all of those odds, like, once we get out of that and the closer that you get, I always think about it's kind of like, even if you don't pick up ground, like, it's almost just like marching toward the end of the season. Like, the stats, the numbers become more real as you get there. And now we're in mid-August. There are quite a few less games than there were a month ago, you know, and you do see these teams like the Mariners, like the Padres, like the Brewers, who are kind of emerging. And some of the rosters, like this Baltimore roster, like, they're going to play some rosters that aren't very good for the rest of the season. And Fangraphs knows that. That's what's baked into those numbers and why the confidence, but it's also the roster. So.
42 games remaining for the Mariners. They do still have the third best run differential in the AL West. The Texas Rangers, who are seven games back, leading the AL West in run differential. The Mariners have won a lot of close games in this stretch, certainly. But,
See, I would be more nervous about it if Fangraphs was more nervous about it. Does that make sense? If
well,
the stats were concerned with it.
it's okay to win some close games if you're also winning the games that are not close.
If you win all
Like,
the games.
yeah.
But the other piece
You
is
can afford to regress to the mean.
Bryce Miller doing one more rehab start in
Thursday night.
Tacoma,
Yeah.
and then presumably back in the rotation. And we are back on! The Gas Brothers are back in full. At the exact right time of the season, plus Logan Evans waiting in the wings. Like,
What's our
again,
aces count at right now?
I think we're at six. I think we are at six, a full six. Sorry, Emerson Hancock, wherever
Tough
you may
fate.
be.
Presumably he's in Tacoma.
frankly, I don't want to know. But we are at least six aces, six plus aces right now for the Mariners. There might be a few Luis Castillos in there. Also, Luis Castillo. By the way, I feel like people would kind of like pour dirt on his grave, but Castillo has just put together an excellent season for this team right now.
Yes,
And it's
he.
been the most consistent. Obviously, like, it hasn't been injured in the same way. But I think pitching war, he's, oh no, Wu's still a little bit better. But beyond that, of the starters, I mean, it's Wu and Castillo who've been there and consistent, and it's been awesome to see.
Hancock 1-2 with a 5.12 ERA at Tacoma this season. I'd like to see that be a little better.
The FIPs are these are for six aces. It's like 3.6 for Wu, 3.7 for Castillo, 3.2 for Kirby, 2.8 for Gilbert, then 5.6 for Hancock, 5+ for Logan Evans. So it's a nice time. I'm okay with the idea of Bryce Miller coming back and taking that spot in the rotation, but
it's great.
Logan Evans is a perfectly capable sixth starter.
Exactly.
If he's your sixth ace, you're in a pretty good position.
Anything else on the Mariners?
Every day I get so excited to watch the Mariners play baseball.
I was going to say, except on the weekends, but youth baseball season is over now.
So I've got baseball back on the menu. Caleb Ferguson is pitching great. Like, the bullpen depth is looking good. Everybody they bring to the plate. I'm just like, I go into every single game thinking the Mariners are going to win.
A bonkers place to be in.
It hasn't happened ever.
2001, it did happen. You weren't there.
no idea.
You have already noted. All right, let's get into the roundup.
How many statues are on this team right now? Like 10?
Minimum.
We need the whole rotation statues, just all the rotation together.
A five aces statue jointly. Yeah, I like it. All right, let's start with the Sounders, who got some bad injury news last week coming out of the win over Tijuana. Both Albert Rusnak and Ryan Kent have hamstring strains, including one of the most significant possible for Kent. He's expected to miss 12 weeks per Brian Schmetzer. Well, Rusnak could be out 3 to 4 weeks. Without them, the Sounders still dominated the defending champs on Sunday in Carson, getting first half goals from Pauly Rothrock and Danny Musovski against the LA Galaxy. Musovski continued to play well in place of Jordan Morris, added a second after halftime, and newly signed Snyder Brunell made it 4 by scoring in his first MLS game. Sounders attempted an incredible 24 shots, putting 8 on goal, and actually underperformed their 4.3 XG in this one. Quieter week. This week is the Sounders have midweek off before traveling to face Minnesota on Saturday. Key battle is the Sounders have pulled within 3 points of the Loons for third with a match in hand. They're up to fourth in the West in points per match now as well, though LAFC still has 2 matches in hand to close a 4-point gap in the standings. Looming, we now know, in the League's Cup semifinals, or quarterfinals, I should say, they will be hosting Puebla on Wednesday, August 20th at Lumen Field.
I wonder what the alternative cost would have been to have kept Robbie Ray. Because obviously they're not getting value from Mitch Haniger right now.
They are not.
But if there would have been a dollar amount alternative cost on the roster to having kept Robbie Ray, because imagine that rotation.
And Robbie Ray's bounce back was pretty surprising to me, I got to say. But yeah, I mean, is it the difference between being able to add Gino and Naylor at the deadline? That's probably the question you need to ask. All right, Seattle Reign FC grabbed the opening goal Sunday at Providence Park with Emery Adames scoring in the 3rd minute, but the defense wasn't up to the task of holding an early lead. Sam Coffey equalized from the spot in the 18th minute, followed by another goal 8 minutes later and one in the 55th for Portland. Reign did pull one back with Jess Fishlock scoring in the 64th, only to concede again in the following minute of what ended up a 4-2 loss. They dropped below the Thorns to 6th in the NWSL standing, still 5 points clear of the playoff line, and then host lowly
Chicago. They're going to make the playoffs. Good.
In Monday Night Football, the Stars have 1 win this season and a minus 17 goal differential.
I was like, hello there. I'm very excited about me official.
Seattle Storm. Not great times for the Storm. It is now in a truly unprecedented run of close losses. The Storm have lost their last 5 games by 4 points or fewer, heading into hosting the Atlanta Dream on Wednesday night. The last two since we last recorded against teams bunched up in the standings. The Las Vegas Aces passed the Storm in the standings with their win at home on Friday, while the LA Sparks got within a half game by beating them at crypto.com on Sunday. The Sparks did subsequently lose on Tuesday, so their game back for the 8th and final playoff spot. Some real heartbreakers here. Two Sparks games in particular, we've been focusing in on these all season because it's not just now, you know, the Storm trying to make the playoffs, with the Sparks currently as the number 9 team, but also trying to keep the Sparks in the lottery because you have that LA 2026 first round pick. The Sparks have been one of the hottest teams in the league. They have the second best record since July 1st in the league. But part of that is they beat the Storm in double overtime in Seattle earlier this month at the start of the 5-game losing streak. And then on Sunday, again, the Storm led by 7 in the closing minutes and ended up having a being unable to get up a three-pointer that would have tied the game in the closing seconds after a De'Ara Kahembi three-point play gave the Sparks the lead for good. So doubly costly losses. But here's the bright spot. Dominique Malunga's development. On Friday, she became the youngest player in WNBA history to score at least 20 points when she had career highs of 22 points, 12 boards, then had another 2010 game on Sunday against the Sparks with 20 and 11. Shot a combined 17 of 23 from the field in those two games. It is 29 of 41 in the last four. I mean, this is a star is born right before our eyes. So I everyone else is very down on the Storm right now. A combination, I think, of, just the trend of the season. The Pelton cast. It's not the golden rule, obviously, but I think we should consider it. Some maybe it's the Pelton cast silver rule that people pay too much attention to where things are going and not enough to where they are right now. And so that's
Aren't
the case
you
with the Storm.
arguing the opposite?
What do you mean? With Dominique Malunga?
Yeah, that we should be looking at where things are going and
This is
not with where they are
no,
right now.
this is where she is right now. Because she's 19. Like, even if you look at the totality of her season, which you should, it's
Who
still
would
amazing
pick
for
one
19.
again? Oh,
Paige
obviously,
Bueckers.
Paige Bueckers. How's Paige Bueckers playing overall? Has been hurt a little bit?
She's playing very well, has been missed for extended periods, but when she's been healthy, has played at a borderline top 10 level in the league.
Okay, fine. We can't make the argument that the
I
Storm
mean,
got a better player.
I had somebody ask me on Blue Sky, and look, Sonia Citron is like not an unreasonable candidate for all WNBA as a rookie. So she's been awesome too as the number three pick. But the Storm are going to be just fine here. Dominique Malunga is the timeline.
The
That's what's
W
been made clear.
man, I think college basketball might have had it figured out in the 80s and the 90s because having people come into the league and just be really good right away is way more fun than waiting multiple seasons.
Are you saying college basketball or the NBA? Are you saying because
College
now the
basketball in
fact
the
that.
80s and the 90s, before there was like 1 year of,
Oh,
players
you're.
who were like one and done in high school, like, but playing years in college and then coming into the professionals and being really good.
It's definitely helpful in many ways. I mean,
I
obviously,
mean, we'll see.
like.
Things might change. Like, NIL may change how many years people play in college. I think there's definitely a possibility of that.
It will, I think, for the mid-tier of prospects. Like, we still haven't seen an elite prospect say, no, I'm coming back for a second year, even though I could be a lottery pick.
It's early. Let me just say it is early in NIL timeline. Basketball is not the same as football. The
I
money
actually would
isn't the
say it's
same.
extremely late in an NIL timeline.
It is not. But that's awesome. I mean, Malunga, the way that she's been playing is like, it makes all of these off losses stomachable right now because it's kind of all you're thinking about. But they need to salvage this season. I mean, the Storm are not winning the championship, right? That is out of the question,
Yeah.
right?
I don't know
There's
that there's
not
ever
a
in the question.
0% chance because you have another golden rule. You have a lot of them. But you have a any chance
The
rule,
any
right?
chance rule, yes.
Like, but the any chance rule, like the percentage is pretty low for the Storm to win a championship this season. I'm a little bit like, are you disputing that?
I'm saying no, I don't think they're in the any chance rule of the championship. But that to me is not and has not ever been, nor should it be the goal. The goal would be to win a playoff series and get to the semifinals.
The
And that I
goal is
think
to
is
develop
still.
Dominique Malunga and get her to the place that she's going to basically be the team in the next 2 years.
Well, they did that. They've done that. That's happening.
Yeah, and to be good enough that she's able to have good players around her and continue to grow, which seems like they're doing right in that capacity.
I mean, that you don't feel as good about, but again, I think they're a better team than they look. If you look at it in terms of point differential, they're the sixth best team in the league. Like, they're basically where they should be. And then, they were running ahead of their point differential for a while when they were contending for, a top four spot and home court advantage in the first round. And now they are running way behind it. Also, excited to see what we're going to continue to get from Brittany Sykes after coming off the bench in her debut on Friday, made her first start ahead of Erica Wheeler on Sunday, scored 27 points in that one, had a ton of terrific defensive plays, as you'd expect from a four-time all-defensive pick from 2020 through 2023. The one thing that's happening now that you've added Sykes and, with Malunga at this stage of her career, some complicated decisions for Noel Quinn on who should finish games. Ezzie Magbegor has not finished either of the last two, probably not surprising. And unfortunately, Ezzie just is not having the season that we expected, or even the season that she had last year. On Sunday, Gabby Williams was on the bench to finish the game, which is pretty wild for somebody who was an all-star this year.
So that was Ezzie and Malonga together, or?
No. Erica Wheeler was out there with Sykes and Skylar Diggins on the perimeter to finish this one.
And Nneka and Malonga?
Yeah.
Okay.
So riding the hot hand a little bit, I mean, Erica Wheeler has been playing very well this year. Like, whoever is going to be on the bench for the Storm at the end of games is going to be, like, of the perimeter players, whichever of these two of these seven players are out on the bench at the end of the games is going to be someone who's good enough to merit being on the court. But I do think they missed Gabby Williams' defense in that span, and just that she's gotten to the point where, as well as Wheeler is playing, she just kind of has to be out there, I would say.
Here's, maybe kind of the way that I feel like the next few months could go is, and maybe a little bit less, I guess there's less than a month of the season left, the next few weeks could go. The Storm are figuring it out right now. They're kind of figuring it out on the fly, what the rotation is, and the team has transformed quite a bit throughout the year. And Malonga's progression, they didn't figure out these rotations back in May, right? Like, they're figuring out these rotations right now. Obviously, the trade changed things. Could the Storm get to the place where, basically, I mean, like, their total amount of points in these losses is 4-4-4-3, right? So 17 points.
No team had ever lost more than three games in a row by 4 points or fewer in WNBA history. They're now at five. It's also the second fewest total points margin in a five-game losing streak in WNBA history. That's per across the timeline.
Oh, no, it was 17 points because there's a two-point loss before then. Yes.
Right.
Okay, so those 17 points, like, any of those games could have gone either way, ultimately, yes. Right? As they've figured out the rotation during this time period, can they go on a run? Because same as we talked about with the Astros, not with the Mariners. The Mariners are good. They'll be good for the rest of the season permanently. No chance of regression. I sort of believe that also. Like, I think the Mariners are just a very good team. They all year, not to talk about the Mariners again, but it was like June. It was like, why is this record not better? The team is better than this. And it kind of just didn't make sense to me. And now things have kind of come into focus. But they're, I don't know if they have Pythagorean records or whatever, but like the Pythagorean record for the Storm is better than 500 right now. Could they go on like five game win streak, an eight game win streak, something like that, as they figured out? If that doesn't happen, that makes me more concerned going into next season than anything else. Losing close games is fine. If you don't figure it out coming out of losing close games, and that's where it's kind of the job of the coach and the front office and some of the leaders on the team to be like, we've lost these close games, we're working toward this larger goal right now, and we're figuring it out along the way. If they can't do that, if they can't get it together here, and if they miss the playoffs, or if they have a bad first round exit, it is a much more difficult position that they're put in longer term with this roster, with this coaching staff.
Yeah, in terms of trying to figure out how they straddle sort of these two timelines and fit everything together. Still 88% to make the playoffs per ESPN's basketball power index projections. An interesting week. They host Atlanta on Wednesday. Friday night, they will play Atlanta in Vancouver in
Annex
the first
too.
Ever WNBA regular season game to be played in Canada ahead of the Toronto Tempo coming into the league via expansion next year. Kind of a huge break for the Storm. It's technically an Atlanta home game that they get to play in Vancouver, a short drive away. I will be there covering this one for ESPN. And then Sunday, as we mentioned, Subred Statue, and then they take on the Phoenix Mercury, another team that's in the middle. These are the two of the teams in 3 and 4, Atlanta and Phoenix, although the Dream will be without Jordan Canada, who suffered a hamstring strain when they lost, or they won, I should say, at Phoenix on Tuesday night. So a little shorthanded there on Monday night. One of those nights, some recent night. And then they start a five-game road trip that is generally against some of the lesser teams of the league. They get some rebuilding teams starting at Chicago next Tuesday. So, they need at least two of these four, probably, I would say, would be good to get.
How is D.C.? They're not good, right? Washington?
Still not entirely out of the playoff race after trading Sykes to Seattle. Got a win in Dallas on Sunday.
but a team the Storm should be. Is it unheard of that the Storm rattle off, right, the two Atlantas, Phoenix, with the, again, if they don't win with the Sue Bird statue unveiling, like, just blow it up, right? You keep Dom and everybody else is gone if you can't win that game. At Chicago, at Dallas, at Washington, heading Indiana, Caitlin Clark's going to be back. Caitlin, they're playing well either way.
They lost both of their point guards. They're not playing as well anymore. They're non-Caitlin Clark point guards.
Would it be unheard of for
August
them
22nd
to,
is a long time from
to
now.
Win every single one of these games heading into Minnesota?
Yes. I mean, there's a chance of it, but that, like, if they could go 5-2 in that stretch, you'd feel really good about things, I think, and be comfortably back in the playoffs.
I think that this is an important stretch for the Storm heading toward the end of the season, but I do think it's an important stretch for Malunga and the franchise overall this next month as they finish this season. It's not going to be a championship season, but it's an informative season for everybody overall on where this team and this roster is going. Obviously, Malunga's the future, but what they're going to need to build around her, I think, is going to be, we're going to look back on this stretch, August 13th to September 9th, and then the playoffs, as one of the most important stretches in the next generation of the Storm.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah. And just like, how much is it next year you're really realistically trying to win, as opposed to build that next generation around Malunga and the two first round picks you still have, even if now it looks like it's probable that neither of them will be in the lottery. All right, UW football received no votes in the AP preseason poll. Did get 15 votes in the coaches poll to rank 41st in that one. I mentioned this on the Discord. I dug it up. The BPI has the Huskies 27th going into this season. So it's interesting
Not FBI?
To see.
It's called,
I'm sorry,
BPI?
Yes, FPI. Yes. I've been talking about basketball power index too much.
Oh, it's the basketball power. It's like the baseball power index.
Look,
I thought about that because all I care about is baseball.
Right. So
FBI is it totally right. Whatever number is highest is the one that's correct.
Oh, okay. That's what we should go with. The one thing I don't have a great sense of is with FPI, you know, it's like a lot about based on program rank, and obviously you have the Kalen DeBoer era is not necessarily representative of this period of time, but Jamon Williams Jr. is probably pretty
good.
What
is it not representative of? There's been one bad season since, I mean, I guess last season was maybe a bad season, but
I don't think last season was a bad season, but it wasn't an elite season. And those two were elite seasons. And those are the only two. You're saying what you're saying.
Making
but
the Rose Bowl wasn't elite to you? Chris Peterson didn't do enough for you?
No, I'm saying that was a long time ago now. That was pretty ancient history.
Oh, how dare you?
I mean, anything before the pandemic is a long
ancient
time ago now.
History?
In terms of predicting the 2025 Washington Huskies, yes, especially given it wasn't the same
You're
coaching
like the
staff. It's
person
three.
On TikTok who's like, here are the Blue Bloods, Oregon and Clemson.
Do you know how many coaches they've had since Chris Peterson?
Just like Oklahoma has never been a good program to you.
I mean, in terms of projecting the 2026 Oklahoma Sooners, I don't know that, you know, the Stoops era necessarily is that telling.
I'm just saying it's ancient history. I don't really buy it. Sure, fine.
Okay, fine.
FPI. The thing that stood out, I also am a little bit skeptical how much they're drawing from that. But like the successes of two seasons ago do still matter.
It also seems like, by the way, the market does see the Huskies in more or less that range, the 25 to 30 range.
And that's based upon like the spread for individual
lines,
games.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what makes sense. The one that I was like, yes, you got this right to FBI was Illinois, the most overrated team in the country. I'm like, Illinois last year, they had one good, look, granted, UW also. I'm not saying that we didn't, but one good win against Michigan. We handshake right there, the two programs. But like the Illinois team is nothing like the players coming back like UW has. And it's really a question of defense, I suppose, at this point, offensive line play, and Damon Williams, just it's a small sample size. So I get it. I get where people are coming from. I just don't. I do care about these rankings, but they matter a lot less in an 18 playoff era than I think they did, you know, when we're trying to fight for four spots. When It's basically like, if you win enough games, you're probably going to get there. And we have the opportunity to go in those games.
You have evidence of it with Indiana last year. Gurion Hatchett, projected starter at right guard, suffered a knee injury during
the
scrimmage last Friday, but back at practice this week.
Okay.
Goodness.
Offensive line injuries is something I cannot stomach.
All right, let's talk about the Seahawks coming off a
We're freaking like 2 weeks away from next weekend is the first college football game that counts. So
week zero. Yes, we were two podcasts away from previewing a game
that
on this podcast.
Wild. I mean, I'm ready to go. Nothing matters until the Apple Cup, but everything matters before the Apple Cup as far as learning things, but
I don't know if I'm going to be either the first two Husky games. So do they really
count? Why
are you
going to miss the first one?
There's a Storm game that night, so we'll see.
They'll be out of the playoffs by then.
Seattle Seahawks in their preseason opener, a thrilling 23-23 tie against Pete Carroll's Raiders. Can you tie the game in the first quarter?
How long did you have that one saved?
No, that was spur of the cuff. Many people, many good stuff, Seahawks writers stuff. Made jokes about neither Pete Carroll nor Mike Shawn included made jokes about how neither Pete Carroll nor Mike McDonald managed to win the game in the fourth quarter. But I did not see anyone say, "Can you tie the game in the fourth quarter?"
Pete was really playing for the tie there.
So you watched this one?
Some of it. I watched like the end of the second quarter onward.
I watched the first two and a half quarters to three quarters. Part
you
of it
didn't
live.
See any of the Cam Miller action. The biggest takeaway for me was I'm like, Cam Miller's a dog.
Didn't have enough time to get there. Who stood out to you?
The Raiders have found their quarterback.
Okay.
Who stood out to me?
Yeah.
I mean, Torrey Horton, obviously, right? Yeah.
I mean, he's just a guy now. Like, we liked him in the draft, liked a lot of his profile and has really backed it up so far in training camp. It wasn't actually an amazing statistical line.
I was
going to
say
seven targets
three
for 31
catches.
Yards, but, you know, it's the preseason. I don't want to read too much into that. And it's more about the agility that he showed both on his punt return, even though that was only like a 5-yarder, and on his touchdown when he, you know, was able to find his way in traffic. It looked very much like a punt return and get into the end zone.
I think expectations are going to get out of control for Torrey Horton. They may currently be out of control for Torrey Horton. He is going to be on the field. Like they've been talking in training camp, like he's running with the ones more than MVS is.
And Kim Miller had 33 touchdowns and 4 interceptions.
Oh,
this guy,
Kim Miller is awesome.
Brock Purdy 2.0? Like,
no, he's going to be good. Sorry, Gino. Pete does it again.
He's short too.
I'm not convinced that Torrey Horton is going to be a starting receiver for the Seahawks in week one, but he's going to start games by weeks 4 or 5, like that. And also just an older receiving core, you know, like counting on health from Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Cooper Kupp is just like, it's not something I would do long term. Like,
are we sure anyone but Jaxon Smith-Njigba is going to start games at wide receiver? Because let me tell you,
oops, all tight ends,
oops, all fullbacks,
and fullbacks,
oops, all fullbacks. I should say that was a standout to me.
I didn't see any of the Oots plays, so I heard people talking in it. They're excited about it.
He was just swallowing guys up as a lead blocker, and then also had a catch, made a play out there in the flat. Michael Robinson was obviously eating it up in the broadcast booth, loving to see it. It made me glad the Seahawks are bringing the fullback into
how many
the lineup.
Targets did they have to wide receivers?
You tell me. Why don't you just tell me what movie you want to see?
Well, some of these people, I do not know the position they play.
I think I know.
Broden, is he a wide receiver?
Yeah, I don't recognize him as not a wide receiver. So
Torrey Horton is 7. Drake Young is 3. Broden is 2. Bobo is 2. That's 14. Ricky White is 15.
I mean, there's also been some question about is Jake Bobo going to make it? A blocking wide receiver in the scheme that is really putting a big emphasis on the run game. Yeah. Yeah, he's going
to
make it.
17 targets to, so there were 32 targets and 17 of them were to wide receivers. So it's a lot of targets to non-wide receivers.
I know it's probably not unusual in the preseason, I would say.
Because you think that they're dumping it off more often?
Yeah, you're just working through the progressions. I mean, the tight ends are going to be a part of this offense for sure. Two nice receptions by Elijah Arroyo in as many targets. But do I know
I
that
mean,
we're
I
going
think
to get.
the thing that Torrey Horton led the team in receptions is probably a good sign. Because there is something about like that there is an ability to getting the quarterback to throw you the ball. Even if you don't
Yeah, that's probably true.
at this point, even if those aren't receptions, the fact that they are targeting you, and I'm sure that it's intentionally, he's the number one receiver on the team during the game, but and that they're drawing up plays for you, you know, like that the offense was supposed to run through Torrey Horton at some point, I think is pretty informative.
So pretty much the entire starting offensive line out there, other than Charles Cross, to begin this game. I guess was Abe Lucas out there? Obviously Cross wasn't, but yeah, I think he was out there, and obviously Gray Zabel, and then the competitions at center and right guard, where Mike McDonald said the team is narrowing in on the starting offensive line, but does not plan to rotate positions this year as they did much of last year at right guard, looking like Anthony Bradford there. Still some uncertainty at center where Jalen Sundahl got
How
the
cute
start.
the best laid plans of mice and men, of offensive line and men, which is like, it'll go exactly as we expect it to.
Yeah, but there's a
No one
difference
on the
between
offensive
like
line will be injured.
worth. Well, that's not the point. The point is, are you th is it so close at right guard that you're thinking about playing both
Yes.
of these guys? And the answer is no.
Sure.
Well, so Sundell has worked with the first team, started that game at center, while Oluwatimi has been started sidelined by a back injury. So I guess they can't really call him a first teamer. But you had Lucas out there, you had Gray Zabel, you had Bradford, and add in Utes, and they were moving guys in the run game. And George Helani was the one taking most advantage of that. 7 carries for 61 yards, including a long touchdown run in this one. Seems to be ahead of Damian Martinez, who was not especially impressive
I
in
still like
his
Damian
CFC.
Martinez. I don't care.
You're not going to write him off based on the one single preseason game?
I against who even knows? You know what I mean? Like the whole thing, all of this is just
We do know who it was against.
nothingness.
Jamal Adams.
There we go.
Three tackles in this one for Jamal Adams. Flashed a little bit in the second quarter.
Pete can't quit his guys. I'm taking nothing away from
He's
this.
playing linebacker now. He's just straight up a linebacker.
The only thing that I would take from it is Cam Miller is awesome.
So 6 of 7, 76 yards, a touchdown. Okay. What did you think of Jalen Milroe? Because I didn't get to his tape.
I went into that last drive being like, they tied the game. The Seahawks had a chance. It's one of those drives where you're like, if this is Russell Wilson, the Seahawks are winning this game. It's a preseason game. He's playing with preseason offensive line. He's playing with preseason receivers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I was hoping that Milroe was going to do something very exciting there, and he didn't. And I was like, I'm just going to judge Jalen Milroe based upon this drive. If he gets into field goal range and scores a touchdown, then I will be so excited about Jalen Milroe. And if he doesn't, I won't be. And I don't know if I'm quite at the point of not. I mean, Drew Lock didn't do anything to like secure. They're going to have three quarterbacks on the roster.
Yes.
And there's a reality that Drew Lock is the backup quarterback. Even if he's not listed as the backup quarterback, because when they get into the foxhole of if, hypothetically speaking, Sam Darnold is injured, Drew Lock is coming into that game. And I just know this for a fact.
Milroe did complete 6 of 10 passes for 61 yards, to
He
the
would
sack.
have to do something very impressive to not be the next option up, I guess is what I'm saying. He's more of a you move him from third to first type of quarterback than he is, he's the backup if something happens.
Yeah, I think this season certainly. Seahawks got a couple of interceptions. Josh Jobe came up with one, was also called for illegal hands to the face, in a play that kind of stood out. And then Nehemiah Pritchett, shortly after he checked in, had an interception. So we'll see Seahawks hosting the Chiefs on Thursday night in their second and final
Is that
home
Thursday night?
preseason
It's
game.
Friday night, right?
Is it Friday night? Oh, I guess it is Friday night. I
Okay.
don't know
I was
what
like,
days
I'm
are.
going, so I hope that I have the date right.
I originally thought it was Friday, and then I looked at the date and for some reason wrote it down as is Thursday.
Yeah, no.
What are days? Yes, it is Friday night.
What
I
is
guess I
Friday?
thought it was currently Tuesday and not Wednesday. All right.
It's fine.
I'll be curious to hear your report back.
My report, probably nothing. No, I.
Who are you taking?
Mateo.
Nice.
It's gonna be an honorary Seahawks fan for the day.
Yeah, he's not gonna wear his Eagles jersey.
He's trying to. I was like, no.
I mean, it would be pretty good troll of the Chiefs fans in the crowd. I actually have to give it to him on that one.
Fair enough. All
On that
right.
note,
Thanks for listening.
thanks.
Okay, now we get to do the real podcast.
You just want to do oops all after the pod?
No, I like talking about the storm. My favorite part is you tell the things that we can't talk about on the podcast. But okay, here's a story. I told everybody else at Kyle's house, Steve's birthday thing.
This
You didn't
is
hear this, did you?
our uncle's birthday, our cousin's house. No, I mean I don't know what I didn't hear.
Okay. Well, you would have known if you heard. I went out of my way to tell anybody that I did tell not to tell you.
Okay.
So,
Because
you know
you're
how Mid
saving this for after the pod.
No, yeah, I was like, this is great after the pod talk. So I told Ben. So you know Mateo quit football this year, right?
Okay.
We've been on the Bills for like three straight seasons. It's been a long time on the Bills. Team stayed basically the same throughout that time period. He's retired from football. It's good to focus in when you're eight, to just lock in on one sport. But I think I've talked about that before. And he'll
He's
play
still
basketball
playing.
too.
Yeah, he's still playing basketball.
But so the rosters come out for the Bills. I'm talking to one of the coaches. Do you want to know who is replacing Mateo on the roster?
I haven't the slightest clue.
Clint Kubiak.
Wait, really?
Isn't that incredible?
You're saying, I mean, obviously, Ted's gonna be a little busy at this point of the year,
Yeah,
but
every game is on a Sunday. Like, I was like, his
oh
mom is just gonna miss Seahawks games to take him to this. I'm fascinated if he like actually shows up and how it shakes out. So part of me is like, thank God I'm not on this team anymore. And another part of me is like, damn, that would have been really fun.
no. You were not on the team, to be clear.
To be a part of the
I
coaching
know.
staff
Yes,
of the
yes.
team, because I was calling plays sometimes last year.
And instead, if Clint
And
Kubiak was watching
Clint
you call
Kubiak,
plays,
offensive coordinator of the Seahawks, dad is like one a Super Bowl winner, father, grandpa of this child, one of the greatest offensive coordinators of all time. I'm there like pointing on my hand on where people should go.
mean, to be clear, even if the elder Clint Kubiak were the one, calling plays. I don't think he's like drawing it up on a Microsoft Surface tablet for
Might be. There are other people who are way
10-year-olds.
more advanced with the stuff than we are that our team.
There are?
Oh
Okay.
yeah, no, they have like sheets and stuff like that. Like there we are always ragtag. And I'm like, this team is crazy. Clint Kubiak has no idea what he's getting into here. But I'm like, he will sc I assume also his
They could
dad was
be.
an NFL quarterback, or his grandpa was an NFL quarterback, and his dad played quarterback at Colorado State and is currently an offensive coordinator. I think this kid's probably pretty fucking good at flag
One
football.
would think, I would hope.
That's why I'm like, also, if Mateo's not gonna beat him out for quarterback, I'm guessing on that one. But I also love to imagine him like, because we have players in the team. Let's say that like somebody else scores a touchdown. Levi will be pissed off at them or whatever. And I'm like, Clint Kubiak is gonna like score and have these kids be furious about it, or he'll get a pick and somebody else will be like, that was my pick on the sideline.
Is Clint Kubiak ready for your dogs?
Oh my God. It was like I was talking to the coach and he was like, I did all this research making sure it was like they saw the name Clint Kubiak or whatever. And I was like, I would pretty much just stop there as far as research. But he was like,
It's not a very common name. Kubiak is one thing, but Clint with a K,
yeah, no,
Kubiak.
I would be pretty confident just straight right there that it was the same person. But he was like, did all this research and like the mom's name and stuff, and they looked it up, and like Colorado State or whatever was like one of the addresses. Like they like confirmed this is the Clint Kubiak Jr. who is on the flag football team. So there was a world there. I mean, I'm like, I gotta go at least at some point to check this out. Like, if they have practices, I gotta know what's going on. Anyway, it is a wild situation. But also, if he's good enough, I'm like, can we just recruit him for our basketball team?
There you go.
There may be positives that come out of this, because I just have a hunch Clint Kubiak Jr. is probably a pretty good basketball player too.
I like his chances, I gotta be honest.
Is that incredible?
It is incredible. I agree with that. Thankfully, helpfully, Google Gemini has told me Clint Kubiak, when I search for Clint Kubiak basketball, is an American football coach, not a basketball player.
Did you mean to search football? I couldn't find anything about the child, like a Clint Kubiak Jr. either, but I mean, maybe he's keeping his children's info offline. Like, he's not like Gary Kubiak level of fame yet.
If I were involved at all in coaching, I would definitely keep my children off the internet as much as possible, I would say.
So everybody has to promise to be real cool about this information.
Yes.
Clint Kubiak Jr. Anyway, that was a wild one. And it was like, they told us that like the day. I don't know. See, maybe there is, this is, because it says Clint Kubiak has one daughter named Nora with his wife, Marissa.
It's another Clint Kubiak.
I'm going to do more research on this. I thought they said it was Clint Kubiak was the name. The source that I have for this is the assistant coaches. But that's the AI overview. So I'm not necessarily trusting that right now.
I would not necessarily, no.
Anyway, it's probably not Clay Kubiak.
In the 11-year-old team or 10-year-old team? No, probably not.
Okay, I had one other thought, though. So ESPN rolled out the Misery Index today.
Yes.
And can I just say that I think it's a fun thing. This is not a complaint about ESPN, but I fundamentally disagree with the concept of misery indexes, in as much as, or if the point is for it to be negative, but like the idea that winning, and this maybe is like too much of a Noah take, but like the idea that winning is the only non-miserable way to appreciate sports is like such a crazy way to appreciate sports. Because you could always just, like, I could have typed in all of the best teams. You know what I mean? Like, you could just pick to be a fan of whomever you want. But that's not even necessarily why you're a fan of the team. But also, like, there are so many teams. Like, for the Seahawks a lot of years, I enjoy the draft when they're drafting high. I enjoy that entire process. Like, when the Seahawks were good, the draft sucked. And there were so many months of the season that, like, you don't get the hope and the excitement. Even, like, later Russell Wilson, it was like, this is fun. But at some point, you're just like, I would be fine with there being a new quarterback. Like, I'm upset about this, but there are so many different ways to be a fan of a sports team. Like, right now, the Storm are bad. We don't care at all because Dominique Malunga, right? It is a lot of the times about like what you could pay attention to, or the like small victories of things that you care about that aren't. We're building three fucking statues in Seattle for a team that never goes to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so this idea that just winning is like all that you have to care about. I mean, that's kind of like the Ichiro point, like the counterpoint to the Ichiro point is like he was the bright spot for many years on a very miserable Mariners team, and that's what kind of magnified him as a star. If he would have been on the team in the 90s, he probably wouldn't have been quite as big of a star or whatever, but you have this moment where you're like, this player who's this good is playing in Seattle, and like those are all of the different moments. Winning isn't it, but also you get to celebrate the losing too, because being pretty good is fine and it's fun, and winning is good sometimes, but I'm terrified that the Mariners are going to win the World Series. And this might be the most Seattle take ever, but I look at it and I'm like, these fucking ticket prices are already higher than I want them to be. And if they win a World Series, it is going to be so annoying. Like, I like the Seahawks way less after they were good than I did before. I cared so much more about the Seahawks in 2011 than I care about the Seahawks now, or I ever will have the capacity to care about the Seahawks now, because we were the real ones there. That's why 95 was so fun. You know what I mean? Like, we were in it through the shit. Like, we were, and that's why I feel like we've kind of earned this current Mariners run, not you, of course, but we've kind of earned this current Mariners run because it's like we've been there now and like seen it grow piece by piece, etc., like to the point that it's at right now. But if you haven't been there and you just pop up and you're a fan, it's like, all right, that's fine, but you don't feel the same way. And if the Mariners win a World Series, it'll probably be the last time I care this much about the Mariners.
There's nothing wrong with being a bandwagon fan, but I agree that you cannot possibly experience the depth of the emotion as
no, you could be a bandwagon fan too. Like that's what I guess what I'm saying is the misery index. Like, you know, we're in the business of misery here in Seattle sports, but that's like part of the reason that it's fun. Like just all of the different things. And they don't include college either, but to me, like the most important victory, I honestly think the like most fun sporting event since the double for me, maybe the tip, but like the tip was pretty big, but beating Oregon, I literally just watched the like last two drives of it in 2023. That game, I'm like, I don't think I will care as much about a sporting event as I care about that. Like, I literally don't think I could care. The Mariners could win the World Series and I will still care more about that game.
I don't know. I mean, I think you, Pelton Cass golden rule. You don't know how you'll feel about it until it happens.
And like I don't care more about the second victory. I don't care more about beating Texas.
Yeah, but that wasn't against Oregon.
I know, but I'm saying I won't care. I wouldn't have cared if they won the national championship as much as I cared about that win.
I agree with that, but that doesn't mean that it's incapable of having a game greater than that.
Sure. I'm just, but so there's so many different like things that you can care about. And if you're an underdog, like winning those games against your rivals in college sports is, I wish that the Gonzaga victory like felt better than it did, but something about it just didn't, having it be the last Mike Hopkins year kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
It just didn't feel quite the same or whatever, but like dropping.
It's also college basketball. One regular season game doesn't mean that much.
Yes.
It's not like it really affected Gonzaga's trajectory at all.
Yeah.
To lose.
So anyway, I'm just like, there's so many different ways to appreciate sport that like even discussing it in terms of misery as wins and losses, like the Mariners have been, we talked about this when we were talking about the Marlins and you're arguing that the Mariners are like such a notable franchise. And like, if you could choose any team to be a fan of just blind, like they're kind of high on the list.
Like for their entire existence?
Or since the year 2000 or something, or maybe 2010, let's say, because it's been a little bit more fun since then. But like relative to record, the Mariners have had, they have a one vote away from unanimous Hall of Famer. They have Felix, who I said was the best pitcher of that decade. They have the best baseball player of all time, of course. Like the Mariners have had a very, very fun and interesting team throughout many generations, and it hasn't included winning, but that's part of it. That's why we are the way we are. If they miss one, we'd be horrible.
Seattle is for Washington as a state is pretty low, all things considered. I mean, obviously.
Are the Seahawks weighing that?
Well, the Storm having a zero misery rating is also pretty big in it. Sounders.
And the Sounders.
Like, we've actually won a lot of championships in the last, 12 years here, I guess. 13 years, whatever, getting back to whenever Super Bowl 48 was.
A Storm championship would have a bigger magnitude now than it did at any point in history.
I agree.
It was just kind of like the misery and having it purely be tied to team success. And I'm like, sure. Well,
obviously, that's how you have to do it. I do think one of the things I believe is if all you're getting out of sports is joy from the wins and sadness from the losses, then you're just playing an emotional lottery. That's all you're doing. So you got to get something out of it beyond that. And I think most people do.
And that's why it's hard. But like, honestly, like team people, like the people of Seattle are probably upset that we're not higher in the misery index because suffered maybe the worst Super Bowl loss of all time. But like, that's also in hindsight, with the benefit of hindsight, like, just what happened after. I mean, you read the freaking book about it. Like, the book probably happens without that, but it is a very different book.
It's a wildly different book. We'll talk about it on the pod. The other element of it is, obviously, like, is there's no misery index for the Sonics. And
that
Sonics
is actual misery, because I don't even care about the sport that much anymore.
Like, the Detroit Pistons are number one in terms of NBA misery because they've gone as long as they have
I'm kind of shocked
without
it's not Washington. I feel like
playoff
Washington
series
is
win.
the most miserable team.
They've won a playoff series, but
But that's not getting it. The Wizards are miserable.
I actually think the Wizards now are kind of fun, but yes, the Wizards for most of their existence have been pretty miserable. But
The Pistons
the
have like
Pistons
they have
also won a
history to
championship
talk about.
21 years ago. Like, it's outside apparently the scope of this because it's the last 15 years.
But there's
But like,
also the Pistons. You know what I mean? Like there's a value in that. Like they have a culture.
yeah, I agree.
I feel like Washington is the most miserable franchise. Or like, I don't know. I mean, Charlotte's kind of had some
Charlotte did
moments
have a run, yeah.
of up and down, but that's not even necessarily it. But those teams, all of those
I mean, the
teams, like if
Wizards
you're
haven't made the conference finals since 1979.
every year, Washington has a chance to draft somebody who could change their franchise for the next decade. And they never do, but they've had those chances. Does that make sense?
You can't
Like,
win. You can't win if you're not even in the game.
but, well, I meant that more like because of the sport of basketball, this is a little bit less true for college sports. College sports are rigged and that everything goes toward teams being good. Teams being good are like recycled as teams being good, especially in NIL era. You know, like money can change that. But for every other sport, because of the draft structure, like there's always a player that can come along that can change everything for the Wizards. And so they could follow college basketball and get excited about players every year as a Wizards fan. And those are like also fun ways to do it. To me, miserable is 500.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but yes, it just there is hope in especially in the NBA. I mean, more so than in other sports, but yes.
But the NFL too, like with quarterbacks, you know, like
You're one quarterback away, but also the odds of hitting on a quarterback are much lower
it
than hitting
doesn't.
on a high NBA draft
If
pick.
we were Titans fans right now, do you know how fucking excited we'd be about Cam
Yeah, but I'm
Ward?
saying that it could be a setup for disappointment, which is
Sure,
more
that's fun
misery.
also.
I don't know if I agree with that.
You're not factoring in that disappointment is also fun. Averageness isn't fun. Because it's kind of like we're here, we're at the party. 7-9 bullshit. That's not that much fun. I guess you can always argue that you're a year away. Anyway, there's just so many different ways to. I get that it's a complicated thing to, and it's August right now. We're like right on the precipice of having a lot to talk about. But I felt like the judging sports in that way was kind of like not. By misery and specifically just wins and losses, because I don't know. I don't feel that way about being in Seattle, even though Seattle is higher, but like the big sports in Seattle haven't had that significant of highs. Baseball, I mean, the Mariners have to be one of the like most miserable franchises, right?
Actually, not quite as high as you would think because they have made the playoffs not that long ago. They're seventh most miserable.
I mean that the ones that are really miss, I'm like when the Pirates are people are like, should they trade Skeens right now? And I'm like, that sounds
Yeah,
kind of miserable, I'm not gonna lie.
that's really miserable.
Yeah, that's like a different level.
The
If it was the
Angels
Mariners, I feel like the Angels at least like
had exciting players, but then it was disappointing that you couldn't convert them into anything.
I mean you still watch Shohei every night, you know?
It's tough to say. I mean, the thing about it is
The baseballs,
misery.
the Angels have had the two best players of the 21st century,
Yeah, but
probably.
then they haven't won a playoff series with them.
That's.
So misery is all in the eye of the beholder.
Isn't that fun, though?
No.
Wouldn't you rather have had the two best players of the 21st century and not won a playoff series than not have had the two best players of the 21st century and not won a playoff series?
I mean, yes, but also, like, you can't be disappointed if you never expected anything.
Yeah, but that's boring.
Because the way you feel about teams is always based on your expectations. It's not based on the team. That's why you feel as positively as you do about the 95 Mariners, because that team
Maybe
did come relatively
that's what
out of
the misery
nowhere.
rating should judge is teams' ability over expectation. And that's when, because if you have a team that's constantly just like doing worse than they're expected to do, that's kind of miserable.
Yeah.
But it'd be a hard thing. I mean, it actually, I don't know if it'd be that hard to quantify,
I mean, you could
but
do it doing based on spreads. Over under totals.
Yeah. Because that is more miserable. A team that's, or a teams that never, like, I agree that my favorite teams ever are ones that have.
Mike McDonald says these starters will play on Friday.
Oh, hell yeah. I can't wait to see Torrey Horton live.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.